Kombucha, a new category in the competitive beverage industry. Many believe that this fizzy drink with probiotic qualities has tremendous health benefits. According to a report from Markets and Markets, the kombucha market will grow 20% every year until 2020. I bet creating a category is a dream of many entrepreneurs. Driven by their ego and bragging rights, they want to originate and invent. The entrepreneurial path has already so many bends. Why not going for a safer concept instead of making the road to success riskier? Being the first mover may not offer the anticipated benefits because the category creator builds a huge platform for competing products. Businesses that follow enter a tested market, which allows them to save money on category research and testing. It's as if the category foundation has been laid out, creating a platform for competing products to succeed. Thanks to this advantage, there's a possibility that competing products become more successful than the category originators. Customers don't care about what was first. They care about what will work better for them. For more than a decade, there has been a design that's been in almost every jewelry collection. Circle necklaces in all their forms have been adored by our customers for years, and we jewelry designers have been taking advantage of it by introducing new circle jewelry designs. Sometimes I would have a client who, after seeing a Lucid New York circle necklace, would let me know that another designer also makes circle necklaces. Both designs had probably nothing in common besides the fact that they included a circle. Being observant and capitalizing on what's already working is a great business tactic, which is often implemented by smart business owners who are able to put their ego aside. By selling circle necklaces, designers and boutiques act in everyone's favor by popularizing the trend even more and offering what's popular to their customers. Precious insight from a brilliant Japanese entrepreneur. I would periodically go on a trend-watching trip to Tokyo and get inspired and see what's next in the fashion world. I truly believe that Japan is one of the most aesthetically advanced countries, with a neat eye for design and where many trends are born. During one of my trips, I was introduced to a Japanese-American investor who had successfully started and sold multiple product companies. I do believe that no matter what we're selling, the success of most product companies is based on very similar principles. We scheduled a meeting to talk about business, life, and anything that Shibuya, a trendy neighborhood in Tokyo, would inspire us to converse about. He arrived right on time, joining me at the famous Tokyo Starbucks overlooking the Shibuya crossing. We were people watching and making small talks about the life in Japan, cuisine, and travel when I asked him what the most important thing was to succeed as an entrepreneur. I did add that I was referring to the financial success. He responded right away, saying that there were only two main conditions for the business to be successful, and people who fail miss one or the other or both. Here's what I found out. To have a financially successful business, you need to 1. Find out what people like. 2. Sell it by the thousands. These simple principles do make sense. Your customers must like your products. You need to find out what they like by testing and tweaking. You need to make sure that what you do is scalable, that it's possible to sell your pieces by the thousands. Entrepreneurs often don't test if customers love their pieces. Or they know that they do, but they realize that the products can't be reproduced in an economical way. Your turn. Reflect, discuss, journal. What are the ways you can test your products? How will you make the decision-making process easier for your customers? How will you make sure your products have social currency and your clients spread the word about them? Creative career insight. Find out what people like and make it, not the other way around. 7. Succeeding as an entrepreneur.
Success doesn't measure a human being. Effort does.
Adam Grant, Give and Take. Show up brilliantly. If you're giving a presentation, save any comments about being unprepared or doing it last minute. Clients also don't want to hear that what you represent was achieved with childish ease.
We want stuff we buy to be sophisticated, simple, and beautiful, made by a talented designer, an artist who put a lot of effort in learning the craft and making it. We want the books we buy to be well-researched, the speakers we listen to well-prepared, able to teach and entertain. So often, speakers show up apologetic. They are sorry for their incompetence. They joke about how little time it took them to get ready or how inexperienced they are. They sometimes even add that they're surprised they got chosen for a particular role and add that someone else should be there in their place. They don't realize that they're mocking the audience and their time they committed to be there. If you want to appear modest, there's a correct way and a wrong way to do it. If you say, "I'm standing in front of you here and I'm terrified," the figurative separation between the speaker and the audience disappears. You appear vulnerable and relatable to your audience, but saying, "I'm standing in front of you here and I'm very nervous, I'm not really a speaker, there are better people than me and I'm not sure why they're not speaking here instead of me," you do not appear humble. Rather, you show a lack of confidence. It makes the audience feel like they made a poor choice investing the time to see you speak. We hear artists describing their degree as not a real one, dancers emphasizing their lack of training, designers lowering their prices before even being asked for it, painters warning their potential clients that they may not like their work, and other creatives presenting themselves as mediocre, adding that they had not been in business for a long time. As an artist, speaker, writer, or other creator, present yourself with humble pride. No one just wakes up like that. Myth of overnight genius. We rarely hear about writers, actors, and other creative entrepreneurs who are not making it. We don't know about books that never left the room they were written in. No one talks about unpublished manuscripts or actors who constantly fail auditions. There are no articles describing the struggle without a happy ending, making it. Speakers sharing their success stories on stage devote little time to talking about the pain of getting where they are. They want to appear joyful, successful, and funny. They don't want to bore the audience with depressing stories of their struggle and rejections. They may mention their difficult beginnings to appear relatable to the audience, but this painful time will seem more like a challenge or a stepping stone rather than a tough time they had to go through. Time full of doubt, insecurity, fear, and the overall mental exhaustion. Most creative entrepreneurs don't start their businesses, or they start and become discouraged because they see someone who made it without seeing the struggle. It seems to them that success should be easy. These business owners are not patient. They think that the road to success was short. That's what it looks like when they observe these star business owners from an outsider's perspective. Watching the Olympics, we are envious of gold medalists. We do suspect these rewards are the fruit of hard work, but we don't realize what kind of a commitment it entailed. Michael Phelps practiced 6 hours a day from the age of 14 until the 2008 Olympics at the age of 23, when he won 8 gold medals, breaking the all-time record of first-place finishes in any single Olympic Games. That's 9 years of training without taking days off. When Phelps was asked about time off, he said that if he takes a day off, it takes him 2 days to get back to where he was, and that's 2 days wasted, which he can never get back. He adapted his coach's philosophy of complete immersion in training. As we can see, it was not merely hard work that made Phelps so successful. It was an extreme devotion to hustling incessantly, where the days blend with one goal in mind, winning the gold medal. There are a multitude of examples of those who had put some serious work before getting where they are now. There are best-selling authors who were able to claim their status after having gone through hundreds of rejections and after they published their third or fourth novel. Everybody has talent, but ability takes hard work. Michael Jordan. Even looking into successful Kickstarter campaigns, which look simple and easy to implement, we can notice that great results are achieved by brilliant execution.
Co-founder Michael Del Ponte and his team from Soma, a Silicon Valley water filter company, were able to raise more than $100,000 on Kickstarter after implementing a 10-step robust marketing campaign, employing virtual assistants, and using apps. It was a well-planned strategy which came to fruition with a lot of effort. Its execution was featured as a case study on Tim Ferriss's blog and other prominent publications, putting Soma even more on our radar. You may discover that striving for a gold medal is not for you. It doesn't mean that you're not ambitious, but it's just that your priorities differ. This single-focus way of life is not for everybody. Most of us prefer dividing our energy between career, hobbies, family, and social life, foregoing the obsessive pursuit of the gold. Money mindful entrepreneurship. Too many business owners don't have it as a priority to keep their business lean. Using the excuse of, you have to spend money to make money, they give themselves permission to spend more than needed. There are firms that watch their spending driven not by necessity but by their habit of being frugal. Sophia Amoruso in hashtag girlboss describes the lean company culture at her over $1 billion in revenue online clothing company, Nasty Gal. She was in charge of approving budgets for a while, but when the company grew exponentially, she had to delegate it. One day, the person in charge of office spending budgets ordered Aeron chairs for the whole office. When Sophie noticed this lavish expense, she promptly asked the person to put all the chairs on eBay. You may be surprised when you walk into the Walmart headquarters in Bentonville. All the office furniture there is mismatched. You'll have a hard time finding two chairs of the same kind, because all these are samples left by the Walmart suppliers. Being frugal, even if you don't have to, is a must to make sure you don't run into the most common problem entrepreneurs face, running out of cash flow. Founders often underestimate their business expenses and too quickly count on the money they're owed. Terms of payment often get extended without our consent. Net 30, being paid 30 days after receiving products, becomes net 45, while our expenses keep accumulating. This time lapse between getting paid what's due to us and paying what we owe is often what contributes to cash flow problems in business. It's crucial to develop our modest spending habits early, even if they seem unnecessary. We need as large of a monetary safety cushion as we can get to account for our business mistakes, unpredictable expenses, and payment delays. Here are some habits of money-mindful entrepreneur. Go over your credit card statements to determine which recurring expenses can be lowered or eliminated. Don't settle being with the same cell phone provider for years. Give them a call periodically to check on their promotions and see if it's worth switching companies. Do the same with the internet, cable bill, and so on. Negotiate payment terms. See if net 45, being paid 45 days after shipping products, could be lowered to net 14, or if you can receive payment up front in exchange for offering a discount. Ask for a discount. Buying materials and supplies in bulk may give you a discount, and often the only requirement for it is that you ask. Choose your credit card wisely to get the most miles and free points. Chris Guillebeau on cardsfortravel.com compares credit cards with their rewards and points. He is a huge proponent of travel hacking, getting points and miles as sign-up bonuses, which allows him not to pay for many of his plane tickets. Chris has been a travel aficionado who travels a few times a year around the world and has been to all the countries of the world by the age of 35. Pivoting after failure as part of entrepreneurial life. If you read enough entrepreneurial magazines, you may notice that there is a certain glorification of failure. Fail fast, fail often, says a Silicon Valley mantra. Ken Tenser, in an article in The Globe and Mail, asks, who in his or her right mind would build a philosophy around failure? He makes a point that this motto focuses on dealing with failure instead of zeroing in on success, proposing a new mantra of succeed fast, adjust, or move on. Having multiple streams of income is the shield which will protect us from drastic effects of failure.
Creatives who are affected by failure are the ones who are either too attached to their business or who didn't prioritize creating multiple streams of income. No one can give us a recipe to avoid all failure, but testing the products, practicing detachment, being agile, and other entrepreneurial strategies described in this book will increase our chances of success. Successful creatives are resilient. They come back stronger after being rejected or failing. It's important to have a healthy attitude and treat failure as part of a process, a stepping stone on our path to success. If you're an actor, writer, designer, artist, or other creative, you are probably very familiar with rejection, which you have received in many different forms. Some rejections come via email, stating something about the timing that's not right, or the product or service not being the right fit. Other rejections mention revising and changing, or mention the budget, crowded market space, etc. Rejections in person are accompanied by a head shake or by shutting your portfolio, creating a slight gust of wind. And yet books get published, new actors get discovered, projects get funded, and art is sold. Those who get published, who are on stage, and who successfully sell their products did get rejected too. The difference is they persevered and made the most out of their rejections. Liza Donnelly, cartoonist at The New Yorker, admits that some of her work still gets rejected every week. Her approach is very accepting. She says, "You have to move forward and don't get stuck on things that you think are genius." Liza treats her work as a communication tool with her readers. Speaking about what's close to her heart and making us laugh is the core reason behind her work. Here are ways to approach rejection creatively. Get busy creating. Emily St. John Mandel, a writer whose first novel kept being rejected for 2 years, stopped thinking about it, keeping busy writing her second book. She did eventually receive a phone call from her agent with a book offer, and by then, her second novel was close to being finished. Are you impatiently waiting on an answer about an important project you had finished? Do your article queries get no response? Keep busy making, writing, creating more, and the yes will show up unexpectedly. Stay in the flow of creating. Adam Grant in Originals claims that the more pieces we create, the higher our chances for success. The author mentions Picasso and his 1,800 paintings, 1,200 sculptures, 2,800 ceramics, and 12,000 drawings, reminding us that only a fraction of it got recognized by the public. By doing a lot of work, we're building reputation, increasing our chances of getting discovered, and improving the quality of our work. Laser focus on the journey of creation. Instead of thinking about the end result and dwelling on rejections, try to refocus and truly enjoy the creative process. Are you a writer? Keep developing your love of words. Be playful. Explore. Are you a designer? Create more products. Stretch your boundaries by trying methods you've never had before. Become rejection-proof. Xia Zhang realized that his fear of rejection was a bigger obstacle than any single rejection would ever be. He started 100 Days of Rejection experiment, during which he looked for a no on a daily basis. He learned techniques to steel himself against rejection and develop confidence. He described his adventures in a book, Rejection Proof. Improve to be a better fit. If used wisely, a detailed rejection from a reputable source can contribute to our growth. Trusting the words of wisdom of reputable industry professionals and following their advice closely can contribute to the evolution of our art into something better fitting in the marketplace. It can happen either by revisions and adjustments or by finding someone else who is a better match for our project. Revise to achieve greater commercial value. If we keep revising at early stages, we'll have a better product, which will make it easier to market and sell. We'll spend a lot of energy and effort in the early stages, but our effort will facilitate sales later. As Ryan Holiday said, "All the marketing in the world won't matter if the product hasn't been made right." Accept necessary steps on the way to stardom. Almost every star, every person who made it, has a story of how tough it was to get there. Celebrities often share their rejection stories and become more relatable and likable. What are you going to say on stage one day when you're famous? That you just woke up like that? Rejections are a part of fame. Accept them and treat them as part of a process. You have to go through them bravely with a no rain, no rainbow attitude. Unlocking your selling platform. In the old days, aka a few years ago in internet years, most business owners were focused on developing their own websites and platforms. There was a common misconception that it was not advantageous to put work and spend marketing dollars on an online store hosted by a third party. Within the last few years, business owners started realizing that it may be beneficial to join a party that's already happening instead of starting a new one. Immediate opportunity of selling on an already existing platform offering a wide audience reach started appealing to many entrepreneurs. Proliferation of selling platforms started enticing business owners to join the best option for them. Entrepreneurs are now able to quickly set up their online stores without knowing how to code. Everything was done for them with a beautiful and easy-to-use back-end where they were able to quickly upload their products and be ready to sell with just a few clicks. Square and other processing payment solutions made charging online easy. This ease of online store setup lowered the barriers of entry. It became more challenging to get our customers' attention and make them click. Customers are now more mindful about giving out their email addresses and accepting promotional emails. Online entrepreneurs had to come up with creative solutions to get the customers' attention, which could be summed up as different versions of offering more for less. There are a lot of selling platforms to choose from. Etsy, which was started in 2005, is one of the most popular ones. As of May 2016, it represents 1.6 million sellers, 25 million buyers, and 35 million products. That's an impressive number of products, which in no way could all fit in a mall. It's easy to set up a seller's profile on Etsy, and the community of avid shoppers is already there, ready to add you as their favorite seller and give you stars and reviews, which other Etsy community members can see. Besides Etsy, there's Creative Market, a platform hosting mainly graphic designers selling their services, as well as ready designs such as artwork and fonts. There's also Society 6, a platform where you can sell your designs ranging from curtains to beach towels, pouches to iPhone cases. I'm going to stop here. Selling platforms are easy to research, and there will already be new ones once you get this book in your hands. These ready-to-sell community platforms are an inexpensive way to test our product ideas and see if this is something we want to further develop. Our businesses are now ever-morphing. We make, launch, observe, and tweak. Infusing creativity into any career has been a must in this dynamic world, offering endless opportunities to those who are willing to observe and act with agility. Being in business with both feet in. Julia was one of my coaching clients who made a bold move of quitting her job as an attorney to start her own law firm. She wanted to expand her reach, get more clients, and grow her practice. Julia and her new business had a lot of potential. She had a tight alumni network and belonged to a few professional organizations. There were a lot of opportunities ahead, but she wasn't able to fully take advantage of them. What was stopping Julia was the fact that, without realizing, she was not fully committed to her business. She would share that she was occasionally reaching out to her former boss, making sure there was still a position for her just in case things didn't work out. It's as if Julia had one foot in her new business while the other one was still in the former company. She was not maximizing all the opportunities ahead of her because she was not completely in, and she didn't fully believe in her potential. Do you catch yourself explaining how you're not there yet, using the words wannabe or aspiring? How can the customers trust you and buy from you if there are so many other creatives presenting themselves as experts? They may be less talented and may offer less, but the confidence they exude will make people buy what they sell. Hustle. Do what you need to be in your business with both feet in, showing your full potential. Under-promise and over-deliver doesn't work in this competitive reality anymore. Customers have no time for your aspirations. They want to get their problems solved, buying from someone who confidently states they can do it.
A not being ready approach strategy may charm your supportive family and maybe a small percentage of customers, but the majority will expect greatness. Your talent will not get you ahead if it is not matched by confidence. You may lose business opportunities to those who not only know how to sell their products, but are also masters at selling them. Your entourage. If you're trying to succeed as an author, actor, or other creative, you know that your road to making it will have roadblocks, challenges that you'll need to overcome to design your dream career. There are going to be people who will remind you how tough or impossible it will be to achieve your dreams. They'll keep discouraging you, claiming that they care and want the best for you. They'll remind you of statistics and low probability of you succeeding, backing their points with examples of those who have tried and failed. They may even go as far as giving you examples of those who made it and what attributes you're missing to become like them. They discourage you because they are probably dealing with something unprocessed within them. However, you shouldn't be a part of this processing. If you notice any of this energy-draining behavior, take it as a sign and mindfully remove them from your entourage before they go any further, dragging you down their path of pessimism. You can't afford to be exposed to this negativity. You need all your strength to keep thriving. Once you make it, don't bother looking for their apologies. They'll probably call their negativity reality checks and claim that they were motivating you. If you let them, they may continue with their delusional observations and add that they contributed to your success. Avoid people who show these signs. You don't need the energy they keep spreading. It will keep affecting you negatively and evoke in you feelings of sadness and discouragement, making you search for validation and approval. Being able to selectively surround yourself with those who are your cheerleaders, those who clap for you and truly want you to succeed, will help your advancement and make the whole process more enjoyable. Frenemies, getting envious constructively. I was sipping coffee, reading through Women's Wear Daily on my iPad. I'm not a morning person, and this is my usual way of starting the day. I do research, information gathering, and reading in the mornings, then move on to working on writing, design, and strategies later on in the afternoon. The complexity of the tasks progresses as my day unfolds. I was skimming through WWD, a prestigious publication which has been delivering fashion news for more than 100 years. I was expecting that day to be just like any other one, me reading the industry news, getting a grasp on what's going on in the fashion world, then moving on to my to-do list. Then, flipping virtually through WWD in a nonchalant way, I noticed my friend's name being quoted as an expert. I clenched my iPad tighter, let out an A sound, which was supposed to be an A said internally, but it was a loud A or an A, I'd almost say. This woman was quoted as an expert in WWD. This thought was circling in my mind, back and forth and across for some unknown reason. I had no idea why this impacted me so much. I've never contacted any of the WWD editors to pitch a story. Looking at my whole array of goals and aspirations, being quoted as an expert in WWD was not on my list of aspirations. So why has my heartbeat accelerated, you may ask? I think it was a mix of being surprised, becoming really motivated with a touch of envy. The quote was a proof of her hard work and having achieved something great in her field. This little incident gave me all the motivational and creative juices needed for the whole day and beyond. I have known Ms. the expert quoted in WWD for a few years. We see each other, unintentionally, of course, at New York Fashion Weeks. We both started blogging about fashion really early and have been invited to fashion shows and events as press. I'm not sure how easy it is to get a press pass for fashion bloggers nowadays, but in 2008, when we both started, people were still confused about this whole blogging idea and didn't know which category bloggers really belonged to. When I was applying for a New York Fashion Week pass, I said I needed a media pass and my request was simply accepted. It also helped that I apologized I looked exhausted as I got back from exhibiting my jewelry line in Paris the day before and was still suffering from the Parisian jet lag. Parisian jet lag, just simply belonged in the whole Fashion Week registration process. I'm not sure if I use these precise words, but I highly recommend throwing in the Parisian jet lag excuse if you had just got back from Paris. This just adds the je ne sais quoi into any story right away. So every time I'd see the Ms. the Expert quoted in WWD at fashion events, we would do the cheek kissing but God forbid really touch faces hello, engage in some fake-sounding small talk about looking good, doing well, and being busy, then continue on with our fashionable schedules. But let me share with you how and why Ms. the Expert quoted in WWD got transferred from being an acquaintance or friend into a frenemy. And let me just make sure that you and I are on the same page as to what this word means to me. Let's call her Shayna for simplicity purposes. Shayna and I, believe it or not, were supposed to work on a project together. It all sounded promising and we had a few great meetings, but then Shayna found out I was going to New Zealand for a month right at the start of the project coming into fruition. Well, I've been doing whatever I wanted with my time for as long as I remember, and this included my month-long trips at the beginning of the year. When Shayna criticized my poor choice of priorities, I knew that our lifestyle choices would get in the way of any possible collaborations, and it was wiser to end this thing before it started, parting ways when it was still amicable. And so we did. I was off to the unknown and dreamy land of New Zealand, looking forward to climbing glaciers and hiking to the fjords. Do what you feel in your heart to be right, for you'll be criticized anyway. Eleanor Roosevelt, in a letter to Lorena Hickok, March 7, 1933. I'm sure there have been countless times when you felt envious. Why not use this perfectly normal human feeling to your advantage? Here is how you can do that. Think or write down the feeling you had last time you were envious of someone's professional achievement. Was it a business venture? A published book? A raise? Describe it and write about your feeling in detail. Then try and refocus the feeling of being envious into the feeling of being motivated by their achievement. My example. My friend got a blog sponsorship from a major brand. What a great accomplishment. She treats her blog as both a creative outlet and a full-time job. After having heard that, instead of thinking of getting back to blogging and trying to get a corporate sponsorship as well, I started thinking how I can apply this creative motivation into my career. Preparing new line sheets for my wholesale jewelry clients sounded like a great step. Her achievement in the field of blogging motivated me to regain focus and prepare new line sheets for my wholesale clients to see. Fighting procrastination by embracing controlled mess. One of the main reasons we procrastinate is that we feel so overwhelmed by the size of the task that we don't feel like starting it. We may also try to defer doing something regardless of the size, simply because we dread it. We try to avoid doing taxes, writing proposals, and other things that involve hours of mundane preparations. Sometimes it's not the scope of the task, but our anticipation that we're not going to enjoy it that is in the way of us starting it. Convincing yourself to deal with the task you dread first thing in the morning is one way to deal with procrastination. We often procrastinate by tricking ourselves that what we're doing is actually work, even if it's not. A writer who wants to finish his book will schedule meetings instead of staying focused on writing, justifying it to himself by saying that he needs to get feedback and network. Doing research is another excuse. It is so vague that any internet activity can be considered research. We often start by reading a relevant article and get sidetracked into reading unrelated things and also calling it doing research. Another one of our excuses is doing marketing, which often involves posting and being active on different social media channels. We measure our promotional efforts by checking the number of shares, likes, and retweets, and we also check out other accounts and channels that are related to ours. If we're not mindful, our social media involvement could be a huge drain on our productivity. One of the first steps to get over procrastination is recognizing it. We all have our own ways to procrastinate, whether it's Facebook, YouTube, reading too many blogs, cleaning, preparing elaborate meals when we're on a deadline, or talking on the phone. The list is long. The first step you can take toward eliminating it is determining how you procrastinate and being aware of it. Tim Ferriss, author of The 4-Hour Workweek, who seems to be one of the most efficient people on this planet, said he tries to pick out the lead domino from his to-do list, the task which, after completion, will make other things easier or irrelevant. We often don't realize that some of the tasks on our list are obsolete or will not help us reach the goal efficiently, yet by being on the list, they make it longer and more overwhelming. Few creatives realize that one of the crucial things to being productive is accepting your controlled mess. Being preoccupied with making sure our surroundings, inboxes, and to-do lists are perfectly in order may negatively impact our creative process. We may use the tidying tasks as excuses to procrastinate. If you want to stay in the workflow and be efficient, it's necessary to embrace imperfection and things that are unfinished. Your laundry may be piling up more than usual. You may have some unanswered emails or skip taking a shower. Give yourself the okay to accept your controlled mess and focus on your creative process instead. Inspiration, as you know, is fragile. So if you find yourself in the workflow, stay there for as long as you can. Gary Keller, in his book, The One Thing, suggests using time blocking. If you decide to try this method, be mindful about it. Keller prompts us to block 4 hours in our day, preferably in the morning, and treat it as important as a scheduled meeting, a meeting with yourself. Projects, paperwork, and errands have to wait. If there is something that comes to our minds during the time block, we should write it down and take care of it at a later time. However, trying to work in continuous time blocks may negatively impact our productivity. It's as important to schedule breaks as it is to plan for work time. Find out what your own time management system is. Trying to create all day with no interruptions is not a system. It will result in you not being productive. We should be able to manage our productive time as well as the downtime. One of the methods of working creatively for a set period of time is the Pomodoro technique. It uses a timer to break down work into 25-minute intervals and short breaks. This method, often called time boxing, is used to force us to achieve uninterrupted focus on one task for a set period of time. After the timer rings, we should put a check mark and set it for 25 minutes again. After a few of these work intervals, or Pomodoros, we can take a longer break. If you are a writer, there are apps and software to keep track of your word sprints, periods of time when you commit to writing nonstop. You can join a group and start writing for 25 minutes of every half hour. You'll see your progress. For example, if you decide to join word sprints at mywriteclub.com, you'll see the running clock, your progress in the toolbar, and if you choose to, you'll see how many words other participants have written without saying what they actually wrote. Once you get to 100 words, you'll receive a star next to your profile picture. At any time, you can click on the stars or word count to check how you're doing compared to others. If you don't want to participate in the group word sprints, you can opt in for private sprints. You'll see the running clock and your word progress, and you'll receive the stars, but you will not see anyone else's results. Timers are an excellent method of staying focused on your task. They make you get into a silent contract with yourself to keep going until the timer stops. The business that had it all. All it needed was customers. We have it all. I could hear the excitement in my friend's voice. He quit a job at a bank and was excited to start his new life as an entrepreneur and start a professional cleaning business. We bought a van, machines, lots of supplies, and products. All we need is customers. I'll never forget that phone call. In all honesty, I really wanted to laugh. There was so much that I wanted to tell him, like, isn't it what you should have thought about first? We decided to meet up and talk. During our conversation, we started by defining what was important about his business. His business was local, so having a high-ranked website rich in local keywords was important. We didn't want the focus of the business to be private homes, My friend would apply to win government contracts and would try forming collaborations with real estate agencies to be the company they'd call when they have a change of tenants in the properties they manage. Focusing on bringing in orders and volume, as well as maintaining a decent website, was a great strategy to start with. Fast forward 5 years, and my friend registered his company, has won multiple government contracts, and was able to form a partnership with multiple real estate agencies. He now has 2 teams and 2 vans that go to different locations and finish multiple projects daily. His company grew so much that his girlfriend quit her day job to run all the bookkeeping and accounting of the business. This is a great end of a story of doing things not in order. My friend's fortunate outcome is unusual. There are businesses that can't share such a successful end of their stories of not making sure first that there's the demand for what they offer. Every day there are businesses offering products that no one wants to buy, and owners are surprised by it. Friend's suggestion to start selling your products and your gut feeling are not strong enough proofs that that's what people want. You can avoid a disappointment if you start your business mindfully. You'll need more than your gut feeling, more than a sample of 1 or 2 to make sure that people want and will buy what you offer. Your turn. Reflect, discuss, journal. How will you present yourself with humble pride? What steps can you take to make sure your business is run with financial mindfulness? What are the selling platforms where you can test and sell your products and services? Creative career insight. Don't undersell yourself. You get what you show up as. 8. Pressure of growth. To become more creative, always a good idea, don't try to think outside your box. Instead, grow it. Bring new things in. Harry Beckwith and Christine K. Clifford, U, Inc. I walked up to a crepes vendor at a local market, wanting to buy one of his dessert crepes. I noticed him handing a crepe to the person ahead of me and was planning on ordering the same one. As I was ready to place my order, the vendor said, "I'm sorry, but we're closed." I looked at my watch and did indeed see that it was 6 p.m., exactly when the market was closing. I looked around and there were many other food vendors hustling. Some booths still had the line of customers waiting to place their orders. Others were pouring beer and scooping ice cream. But the crepe vendor was closing for the day, refusing to make another crepe and saying no to my $10 bill that would come with the transaction. I didn't ask or negotiate. I looked at him, asked him if it was his business, and when he confirmed, I said, "Good for you." And this is exactly what I felt. I was happy to briefly meet a business owner who closes his business doors on time. I look up to someone who lives a life on his own terms. We all hustle to sell one more crepe in our businesses, and this vendor sets his finishing time for 6 p.m., Maybe he had his daughter's school recital to attend. Maybe his crepes were that good and he ran out of batter. I'll never know. I wasn't able to buy one. Business equals you. Staying small and loving it. Ever since I started Lucid New York, my jewelry business, in 2004, I've been constantly offered unwanted advice on how I can grow my business. I was told that I needed to move to a larger office, hire more staff, and incorporate. I kept hearing there was potential and was being told inspiring stories of jewelry brands such as Pandora or Alex and Annie. I was receiving email invites to GrowthCon and GrowCo, conferences focused on growing businesses. Business coaches and consultants were approaching me with their "let me tell you how to grow your business" pitches. I didn't want to hear any of that. I looked at growth mindfully. To me, it's more about growing deeper than broader. This holistic perspective is in alignment with my values and my idea of how I measure my life. Looking at growth multidimensionally, I've been aspiring to have a meaningful business that is profitable and makes a difference. Instead of focusing on how to make it even more profitable, I recognized the sweet spot of enough and refocused my energy on growing in other areas of my life. I focused on connections and friendships. I learned to cook delicious meals and have been offering them during dinner parties I organize. I learned how to sail. I took trips for a cause, participating in conferences and working at orphanages in India and Sri Lanka. I saw orangutans in the wild on the island of Borneo. I became a co-active certified business building and life coach and started making a difference by sharing my business building expertise and inspiring transformation. I wrote this book. Growing deeper instead of broader has been very fulfilling and energizing. My jewelry business has been thriving as I fuel it with all the energy I get from the projects and ideas I'm involved in. I've been alive on so many levels. Getting rid of the obsessive pursuit of business growth has been liberating and rewarding. I'm not trying to convince you that this is the right strategy. This is the strategy I chose, and it works for me. There are many ways to run your business creatively, and I'm committing to presenting them objectively so that you can design your lifestyle on your own terms. I wasn't able to make this choice at the beginning of my entrepreneurial path. I put in long hours in the first year of running the business to get to a comfortable level and be able to make strategy choices. You may be able to set some rules for your business right away if your products are in demand. For example, if your boutique gets a lot of traffic without any marketing efforts of yours, you may afford to set your own operating hours. You'll need to be more accommodating if you have to keep spreading the word about your brand and your store. Business is greater than you when your business outgrows you. If you're a proponent of bootstrapping, growing your business by reinvesting profits and doing most of the tasks yourself or subcontracting them, there may be a time when you may start feeling that your business is starting to outgrow you. You will need to consider changing the strategy, and you will have a few exciting options ahead of you. If you find yourself not being able to handle the overwhelming demand, consider increasing your prices. This is the strategy you'd want to implement if you want to keep your business where it is at. If you have growth in mind, you'll need to implement more systems and hire some additional help to be able to continue shipping and handling orders, providing great customer service and making deliveries on time. Your customers will expect to be treated well, regardless of you having issues with growth management. Don't expect them to be understanding, as they have to run their own businesses and deal with their own problems. If you are not easy to deal with, they may not reorder. Automating tasks and changing your production or delivery process, making them more efficient, is one of the strategies you may want to consider. What may seem like a minimal change may add up to a substantial amount if you take into consideration the quantity you'll be making. Saved time and energy will add up and work in your favor. Even if focusing on setting up more efficient strategies may sound like a waste of time at first, as there may be a learning curve requiring extra time, it will benefit you in the future. Danger of growth at all cost with no plan in mind. Speed is only useful if you're running in the right direction. Joel Barker, Future Edge. Business owners think that they can handle anything. Most entrepreneurs are certain that they can handle any number of accounts and fulfill any size of orders. They may think that if they sacrifice, work long hours, and stay up all night, they'll be able to manage no matter what comes their way. They don't realize that it's not college anymore, where last-minute cramming may make them successfully pass an exam. They now need a thought-out business strategy that will match the demand, or they'll set up themselves and their potential customers for a disappointment. There are businesses that failed because they were not able to handle the demand and rapid growth. Their owners were probably waiting until last minute to create the fulfillment system to handle the overwhelming demand. Customers will likely not be understanding regarding the fulfillment issues. They expect to receive their orders as promised and on time, or they'll lose trust, cancel their orders, and do business elsewhere. An accomplished photographer was doing well without employees. He was hiring an assistant when needed, but was able to accomplish most projects on his own. When he noticed that he had to say no to some jobs because he simply couldn't be in two places at the same time, he decided to hire help. As a result, he started working more because he had to train and manage the team. His revenue increased, but because of the drastic spike in expenses, his profit decreased compared to the time when he was just a team of one with an occasionally hired assistant. He was either not charging enough for the assignments or not getting enough jobs to make hiring of the new employees worthwhile. Focusing on expansion with no plan in mind may negatively impact your business. If there's no system to handle growth efficiently, you may end up with more work and less profit. Growing mindfully on your own terms is the safest strategy for a creative. Growing deeper instead of broader. When most of us think of business growth, we think of expanding the reach, territory, and customer base. We are conditioned to think of growth in terms of increasing the numbers, and this strategy is being forced upon us regardless of what we want in life. It's as if there was one mold to run a business, the growth mold, and we need to fit in it. If you approach your business growth mindfully, you'll plan your expansion according to your resources, aspirations, and time. You may want to consider growing deeper instead of broader. This growth strategy focuses on making your business lean by researching optimum strategies. It's working smarter and more efficiently instead of blindly focusing on expansion. Here are deep growth tactics. Doing a detailed analysis of your business expenses, trying to reduce or eliminate costs, whether it's lowering your phone bill or finding a new supplier, offering competitive prices, negotiating terms of payment, or paying up front in exchange for a discount. All these cost-reducing strategies will contribute to the overall business health. Applying effective strategies and exploration of new systems, which can make your business more efficient. Whether it's apps, new communication, collaboration software, or other productivity tools, checking regularly what tools are available will make your business more efficient by either freeing your time, increasing your profits, or both. Hiring stellar help and staff. It's important not to settle when working with someone just because you have been working together for a long time. It's worth spending extra energy and effort on training new staff or starting a relationship with new suppliers. Growing deeper is all about perfecting our business strategy so that we can save time and money. It's not necessarily expanding our business, it's growing it smarter instead of broader. Liberty of not leading. What if we took off the stigma from the word follower and redefined it according to the current realm? It's the genius who isn't preoccupied with the setup, logistics, and managing of projects so that things are functional. It's the founders who are in charge of the setup, making sure that everything is ready for the show to go on. We call these founders leaders and call those who make the actual thing happen followers. Why do we glamorize the setup and not the actual execution? Why does everyone want to be a leader? On a film set, the actors, essentially followers, get the spotlight. They have everything set up and directed for them. Actors show up and do their job. They act. They get recognized for their talent and their looks. They endorse products. People want to be like them. Usually, they don't dream of leading. They're satisfied with following. Susan Cain, in the New York Times article, "Not Leadership Material? Good. The World Needs Followers," defines the followers as soloists who forge their own path. They're the doers and thinkers not interested in the setup. Leadership attracts those who are motivated by the spotlight rather than by the ideas and people they serve. Susan Cain, "Not Leadership Material? Good. The World Needs Followers." Examining your creative future, think deeply about what you want. Regardless of society's pressure to lean in, think if this is what you want. Being a leader, entrepreneur, someone in charge of the setup, requires some kind of a myopic obsession. Leadership has become more encompassing over the years. You do have to be well-rounded. Barking orders and telling people what to do won't cut it. Sheryl Sandberg says in Lean In that there are no more career ladders, but rather career jungle gyms. However, this expansion from ladder to a jungle gym may still not be enough for some. You're still growing only on one playground. This unifocus, which is necessary to excel, may not be satisfying for those wanting to thrive in many areas. Your ambition could surpass the unilevel aspirations of a traditional leader, the one excelling in politics or business. There are so many areas where we lead, but where we're not recognized as leaders. Those who want to lead a household, lead an orchestra, or be a leading artist may not have traditionally recognized leadership positions, but feeling fulfilled in many areas may contribute to living a life by design. When a creator has an exhibit, isn't he a leader? He does the setup, has people follow him, and gets the spotlight. Isn't he important enough? What is leadership all about? Shouldn't our desire to lead extend beyond our ego satisfaction? Shouldn't we be driven by the idea we care about instead of by the spotlight of being in charge? When we start accepting our status of non-conformist and start living according to our own values, we'll get a taste of feeling complete. Success comes with the territory. The more successful you become, the more reactions you'll get toward you and your work. These reactions will range from admiration and support to negativity and hate. The ease of sharing our messages and opinions has its advantages and disadvantages. We can be presented with unexpected opportunities, but hidden behind the screen of anonymity are also those who are not brave enough in real life and try to make up for it online and tenfold. They sprinkle their mean comments all over the internet. They get into long, convoluted exchanges with others in order to elicit an emotional response. They, too, are narcissistic. They want attention any way they can get it. The winner takes all is now the meanest takes all.
If you write, or paint, or dance, or sculpt, or sing, I suppose, someone will try to make you feel lousy about it. That's all.
Stephen King, On Writing, A Memoir of the Craft. It's practically impossible to please everyone, and sometimes the mean comments will be sent our way because of things unrelated to what we do. We can't control someone else's envy, jealousy, and anger displacement, but we can control how we react to it. The only way to deal with negative comments is to accept them or stay small and minimize the chances of being noticed by internet trolls. Celebrities, while gaining popularity and fame, lose privacy. Successful entrepreneurs enjoy the perks of more exposure, but they also need to come to terms with its downside. They may face more critiques, deal with more problems, and have more stress. Though certain problems and complicated logistics can be managed by hiring more staff, no one can control negative comments and reviews. Success may also come with a feeling of guilt, known as imposter syndrome. We may think that we don't deserve our success and that we didn't work hard enough for it. The territory that success comes with will be new and unknown. It's up to us how we will handle it. Defining our enough. There are numerous articles and books on helping us grow our business. Society puts pressure on entrepreneurs to focus on growth, defined in financial terms. This pressure is so strong that some of us think that focusing on growth is the only way to run a business. I'm not against growth, but it's necessary to define what growth means to us. Here is what to keep in mind when defining our enough. Think of a monthly money amount that you want to make. Keep in mind that especially at the beginning stages of running a business, more money means more effort, more work, and less time. There are numerous stories of people who make a lot of money, but don't have the time to spend it. Think which direction you'd like to pursue, minimalism or accumulation. Both directions come with their own adjustments. Minimalism means living with less, requires less money to maintain your lifestyle, and frees more time. Accumulation means living with more financial comfort and abundance, and requires more money, energy, and working hours to maintain it. No one should tell you what's enough. It's for you to decide how you want to live your life and set your goals accordingly. There are those who unrealistically think that accumulation or wealth will come without the hustle. They will want to create and maintain an abundant lifestyle, but will look for shortcuts to get there. This may lead to frustration. Many budding entrepreneurs who make the transition become surprised when they put in a lot of work and energy, but it didn't provide them with an abundant lifestyle. It was different when they were employed. They don't realize that they may need to step down their expectation ladder and become minimalists who hustle and put in long hours. When you're an entrepreneur, you invest your often unpaid time and risk not getting the payoff at all. There are many who are too paralyzed by this thought to start a business. There are others who embrace this temporary discomfort, hoping to reap the ultimate reward.